My name's James. I'm an alcoholic. I'm really grateful to be here tonight, grateful to be sober. I want to thank Robin for asking me to be a part of, you know, sharing a message at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. Anytime I'm about to speak, before I speak, I ask God to give me the words and deliver the message that He wants me to. Usually I read the 24-hour book, but, you know, rushing out of the house with a 2-year-old, I left it at home, and then halfway here, I'm like, this isn't good, you know. I'm going to have to come up with a different plan. So I stayed in prayer the whole way here, you know. I just want to say my experience on steps 1, 2, and 3 might be different than other people's. Maybe other people, you know, had a different sponsor, or they, I don't know what they would do, but it's all the same stuff out of the same book. But, you know, tonight I'm just going to share my experience about the steps 1, 2, and 3 and what they did for me and how they apply to my life, you know, when I came in and today still. Like I said, I'm, you know, my home group is Early Risers, and they meet 7 days a week, 6:30 in the morning, which was real easy for me because I didn't have to think of what day it was. I didn't know what month it was when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, so, you know, having the days, that was easy for me. 6:30 in the morning, I woke up at 5:30, I went down there, and I got the message, you know. Great home group for me. If you don't like your home group and it's not the best home group for you, you know, I'd advise you to find a new one, you know. For me, Early Risers was it, you know. And, you know, they're doing miraculous stuff down there. Last year alone, they celebrated 25 one-year anniversaries. It's like preposterous, you know. I've never heard of anything like that, and I'm sure other groups are doing it, but people are getting sober, they're staying sober, and they're going through the work, you know. When I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was beaten, I was broken, I was homeless. I'd spent the last 3 months of my life panhandling, collecting cans, robbing the people closest to me. So when I got here, I had a lot of baggage of a lot of stuff, a lot of problems, and I had absolutely no concept on how that could be solved. You know, creditors, that's not even the word, you know. I owed drug dealers money, and they weren't as nice as creditors, so they would try and seek me out, and, you know, it was hard for me. You know, I had a lot of fear coming in, and a lot of guilt, a lot of shame. And my first day coming down to Early Risers was March 18th, 2009, and my sponsor, who I didn't know was my sponsor yet, you know, but he was chairing the meeting, and I'll never forget, he came from around the table, and I get a little choked up when I talk about it because it meant a lot to me. It still does to this day when I think about it. My wife had been going down to Early Risers prior to that for 2 years, so while I was out getting drunk, getting high, she was crying, and everybody down there knew who I was because she was sharing every single day that she had this alcoholic, crack addict ex-fiance that needed tons of help, you know. I was supposed to get you know, do an intervention with like 3 different people from Early Risers, but I never showed up. So when I got down there, my sponsor knew who I was. He walked from behind the table, said, "My name's Ryan. It's nice to meet you." He shook my hand, and he says, "You're James, right?" I said, "Yeah." I was sitting on the back of the wall by the fire extinguisher sign. I'll never forget it, man. It was just like the first time somebody had shaken my hand in a long time and looked me in the eyes and knew who my name was. And they didn't want anything from me. They just wanted to know who I was and get to know me. I thought he was somebody important. I knew what 12-step programs were because I had gone to the different 12-step program and did absolutely nothing, and that's why I was coming back, you know, when my first time in Alcoholics Anonymous. After the meeting, he came to me and he said, "You know, I'm available if you want to talk or you want to get a cup of coffee." He said, "Well, I need a sponsor. I know that much, you know." And he says, "Well, I don't sponsor people. I just take people through the 12 steps. And after that, if you like what I did for you, you can call me a sponsor, you know." And that's what I do to people today because it clears all the BS out of the way, you know. Listen, I am not a financial expert. I don't know relationship advice. You can ask my wife, believe me, you know. I know the couch very well, and I'm not good at any of that stuff, you know. But I have had a spiritual awakening as a result of the 12 steps, and my primary purpose is to take somebody else through the work. You know, and by doing that, the most amazing things happen. You know, I try and keep it real simple for myself. You know, started reading the big book with my sponsor about maybe a week after I came in. Some people say, well, it should take a little longer. My sponsor said, look, you're done throwing up, let's do it, you know. That was it, you know. We started going through the book. And I was reading stuff that I didn't comprehend, I didn't understand. And they were talking a certain way that wasn't my dialect or the people that I was hanging out with in Hempstead. They didn't talk like Bill W., you know. So it was good to have a sponsor. It's good for somebody to take me through the work and say, this is what that means. This is what this means, you know. He didn't ask me, what do you think about that? He told me what it meant, you know. It's good for me. I needed a lot of direction. He knew when to be stern. He knew when to take out the feather. He knew when to be the person that I needed, you know, a little bit of love from, you know. And he's an amazing sponsor, you know. I started reading the big book, and I got to the doctor's opinion, went through it, and some people say they're relieved, they're happy, they have a disease. Me, I found out that I was toasted. I was going to drink again. It's a guarantee. The doctor's opinion is not a happy feeling after you read it, especially for somebody like me. I knew what the mental obsession was. I definitely had a concept of what it was because I was not only an alcoholic, but I was also a crack addict, you know? And anybody who's ever messed with that stuff, you know that that mental obsession is vicious 15 seconds after you're done, you know? And I was screwed. I was going to drink again, you know? And I remember reading stuff. In the doctor's opinion, you know, frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices, you know. And I'm like, you know, what does this have to do with winter? You know, he's like, it's not frost, you know, it's frothy, you know. Like I said, I was tore up, you know, from the floor up, you know. Not to mention, I was like 110 pounds when I came into alcohol. Took me through the doctor's opinion, and we read it line by line by line. And then we would reread stuff that, you know, was really had to be reread, you know. And I knew I was powerless over alcohol. I knew my life was unmanageable. It had to be. Nobody collects cans on a Friday, you know. Nobody hangs out with cockroaches like the ones from Men in Black. Big ones, you know. I'm telling you. And people don't do this stuff. People don't rob their grandmother's purse, you know. My grandma used to look at me. She knew what time it was. Just look at me. She would walk away from the purse, the hair salon, so she always had cash. People don't do that stuff, you know. That's not what step one's about. It's not about an admittance, you know. It's about a surrender, and it's about honesty for somebody like me. You know, they say admitting, you know, are we admitting to ourselves, you know, this higher power that's going to be introduced. It's the first time that I felt helpless on my own, you know. That's the whole point of step one for me, was to say, all right, James, you can't do this, bro. You know, you're horrible at living life. You're horrible at staying sober. When you stop, maybe for a little, you can't stay stopped. You pick up an alcoholic drink again, you know, and all I can vividly remember is girls and nice times and palm trees and Patty McGee's and the lights and the shoes and the cologne, you know. I don't remember the other stuff. Crack stems, the, you know, being a thief, you know. I was the biggest thief, you know. I don't remember that stuff, you know. And the other part of my disease, maybe other people in this room don't have it. I'm sure you do. But even when I did remember, it didn't matter. Consequences? Jail? I'll do that. 6 months, 8 months, bullet, give it to me. It's part of the game, right? Write it off, you know? That's what happens when we drink alcohol. It's all good, you know? I'll take the 8 months. I'll ask Kathleen Rice for a therapeutic community program. You know, I'll go away. I'll come back home from Daytop, Swan Lake. Do 11 months, I'll pick up the first day out like I did. You know, like I did back in Savannah's drinking and snorting cat tranquilizer. You know? That's what happens to somebody like me. I don't care because when the disease tells me it's time to go, it's time to go. End of story, that's it. It doesn't matter. You know, it's horrible. It's a horrible feeling when you're driving down the road to go do a urine test and you look into a tree and you decide that's a nice place to get high. And all of a sudden, the obsession jumps off, and I got those butterflies in my stomach, you know? I can remember coming home from Daytop, and I was good in the mountains. But once I got down to 878, and I passed Guy Brewer Boulevard, and I saw the McDonald's on my left, and I saw Far Rockaway to my right, and the Atlantic Beach Bridge, and I knew Long Beach was around the corner. We had to go through the West End of all places, you know, and started having these feelings, you know. I never knew what that was. I never knew it was called a mental obsession. Upstate and Daytop and other places, they used to call it my belly was flipping, you know. It's definitely doing something, and I knew right then and there that I wanted to drink, you know. And I might be able to hold it off for let's say the most 2 days or a couple hours, you know. Didn't last long. I picked up and I was back on the run doing the same stuff that I swore I'd never do again or that I just didn't care I was doing again. My sponsor definitely knew that I was an alcoholic, you know, when he started hearing a little bit about myself and telling him my story, and I identified with him so much, you know, because he was a younger guy. He was 32 when I met him, or 31, and had on these uptowns and, you know, big, nice white T-shirt. It was like a 4X, you know, it was like down to here, you know, and then he started talking to me about God, and I'm like... Who is this guy, you know? What are you talking about, you know? It's not who I thought you were, you know? But he had went through the work, so there was no other way for him to live, you know? You know, we started reading different stories, you know, Bill's story. There is a solution, you know, and I identified with all this stuff, you know? And then when they started talking about this higher power, I don't think that it wasn't that I didn't believe, which isn't step two. It's not just believing in God for me. I grew up a Catholic. My stepfather and my mom were catechism teachers. And I remember my stepdad used to tell me all the time that God loved me, you know, loves you so much, you know. I didn't feel it, though. Not even drinking. Before drinking, I never had an intimate connection at all. It was just maybe something's out there, but right now I got to play hockey and be a kid. It wasn't something that I, you know, looked forward to. And especially after I picked up my first drink and... first drug, that didn't matter to me, you know. But talking about it with my sponsor brought up a lot of uncomfortable feelings that I never even knew I had. I remember he used to say, I remember we read the part when Abby Thatcher comes to Bill's house. He says, choose your own conception of God. And my sponsor closed the book and he slid it over to me and he said, the ball's in your court, kid, you know. First time that I had no excuses. You know, this thing was loving, caring, wanted to look out for me, wanted to have an intimate relationship with me. I had nowhere to move. I was like in checkmate, you know. Some people say, well, you let people get their conception, you know, find them now. That's what I hear every time. Find him now, you know. If it's that important to find him now, me, I had to find him now. You know? How long was I going to go sitting in AA meetings without a sponsor or not doing the work or not taking these steps, not being open-minded, and having the willingness, well, I picked up a drink again. A week, 2 months, you know. I didn't have that long. I remained open-minded. And I was started, you know, prayer for me in the beginning was a little bizarre at first, you know. Kind of cursing during it and asking questions and not understanding, you know. And remember my sponsor says, yo, there's a right and a wrong way to pray. People say there isn't. For my sponsor, he told me there was. I was constantly praying for diamonds and cars and jewelry and women and money and all the things that I wanted. All the things that made me more of an alcoholic than I even knew. You know, we started going through this conception of this higher power. It's like the 12 and 12. They say as soon as the door cracks, you know. As soon as the door cracks open, it flies open before you know it. You know? As soon as I said, yeah, this guy exists, my sponsor says, all right, we got half a step two down, you know? And the other part of him caring about me, restoring me to sanity, that was a huge chunk to swallow, you know? It wasn't just believing that he was out there. What's this guy going to do for you? What's the possibilities, you know? That he can restore you to sanity? I'm a long way from sanity now, you know? Sometimes I can get, you know, completely off my rocker, you know, and... I can be chaos in a half a second, you know. Yeah. The horn is loud and the bird flips and the cutoff lanes don't end and, you know, all of a sudden I'm in a sticky situation, you know. But being restored to sanity, you know, what did that mean, you know? What's being insane? Say, well, it's doing the same thing over and over, expecting a different result, you know. People like us, that's like that's an understatement, you know. I mean, for alcoholics, you know. I mean, people drive... cars through schools, I hear, you know, and then end up in pools, and, you know, and I heard this one story, this guy tied his kids to the roof, or the bumper of his car, the hood of his car, just to drive to the store, because they were crying in the car. Who does that? I do that, you know, I mean, I'll duct tape the two-year-old to the top of the roof so I could get a bottle of E&J, you know, I mean, that's what I would do, you know. Sanity, I mean, I was a long way from that. As soon as I, like I said, the door cracked open, it was like swung open, you you know? I mean, things started happening before I even really think, before I think I even had this intimate relationship. Or at least I don't think I had the connection, but he was definitely reaching out for me. Things started happening like my grandmother letting me back in the house, you know, that was huge, you know. Things started happening like a little job here and there, side work once in a while, you know. Things started happening like me sleeping in the bed instead of the couch or in the basement, you know. I started seeing little things happen, you know. Definitely made me believe more and more, you know. And if you're having a tough time with that, you're new, or you're just coming back, plant the seed, you know. Slowly but surely you water it and it grows and grows. And the telephone lines on, you know, the bars on the cell phone get higher and higher and higher, you know. You start to hear more, you start to share more, your heart opens up. You know, it takes time, though, you know. I wouldn't open up to anybody, you know, let alone God, you know. So step two was definitely like the launch pad, you know. And three, landing there was like just monstrous, you know. When I think of step three, I always hear people share, you know, going out and doing God's will. I was a far long way away from that. You know, step three is not to go out and do his will. I had serious resentments and character defects. If you wore a New York fitted and you robbed me last year, I was slamming the door on your face. But I was ready to do step three, you know, do God's will, you know. I was a long way from there. People hated me on the street. My grandmother despised me, you know. I stole so much money, I couldn't even put a number on it, you know. Step three for me was decision to keep on continuing, doing the work, you know. When they talk about the actor and how he does all these different things in the book, he's nice, he's mean, he's, you know, he's sneaky, you know, he's definitely talented, you know, just to get his way. And I did that my whole entire life with every situation, you know. If I made $8 an hour, I asked for $9, or I tried to get $9, or if I wanted something, I was going to definitely get it, you know. But everything in life always had to be my way, especially, you know, with different things, harder things like my father, you know. My father was an alcoholic and he's a drug addict, you know. He smoked a lot of marijuana, you know. Cheech and Chong, like I said, that's an understatement for him, you know. He drives a motorhome, too. It should just be made out of weed, you know. But it's nuts, you know. And as a child, he didn't come around a lot, you know. When he was rough to deal with. He still is rough to deal with when he pulls up into my driveway, plugging into my electric, you know. And I get a bill next month for $500, you know. When he's got the dog. That's nuts. But it's all good, you know. My father was, as a child, I always wanted him to be the typical, I wanted him to be my stepfather, who got sober in AA right before I turned 5 and remained that way to this day, you know, 23 years. And I wanted him to be him, you know. Even as an older kid, when I was drinking and using, you know, it's definitely the Cats in the Cradle song, you know, I started doing things like that out of sheer spite, you know. I don't have time for you. I got stuff I'm doing. I'm going out here. I don't have time. You know, I was constantly trying to control the situation with my father, whether it be getting his attention or pushing him away because of the horrible feelings that I had. You know, when, you know, being the actor is definitely something that I like to play, but, you know, experience and checking the record, you know, I see that this does not work for me, you know. All of a sudden, we have this new employer. You know, this guy that we take on, you know, this God of our understanding, whatever it is, making a decision to turn my will and my life, that was a huge chunk to swallow, you know. I had a tough time with willpower, you know. Willpower was like, part of me was like, all right, I need your help while I'm drinking, you know, or to stop drinking, you know. But I always have this vision of me going down the Meadowbrook, you know, and I'm sober, so now I don't need you. So I stuff God out the car doing 90, you know, and he rolls, you know, and that's all I needed him for, you know. But that was insane, you know, insane thinking, you know. I need God completely. Taking him on fully was a hard chunk to swallow, you know. But these steps, I think they magnify over time, you know, when they're stronger and stronger, you know. You don't just jump into AA, you're like, all right, man, powerless, I'm done, you know, I believe, and I'm ready to do it, you know, I love you, I love you, I love you, you know. I came to meetings, I hated people, you know, I couldn't stand them, you know, and steps, and, you know, I want to take the elevator, bro, that's the way I do it, you know, I love instant gratification, that's why I did the drugs that I did, you know, I want immediate done, you know, and this takes time, you know. takes time. And like I said, this is just my experience, you know. Step four was definitely a floozy for me, but I know that's, you know, next week. I mean, I used to resent my grandma for hiding her purse, you know. She knew what time, she knew I had to steal, you know, when you're high making me look for it. I'm going to take it anyway. Serious, I was sick, man. I was sick and suffering. I needed a lot of help. You know, that launching the launching process of honesty and open-mindedness and willingness, you know, where it's at, you know. I was thinking about it on the train today, passing stops like Rosedale on my way back to Baldwin, which is where I park. And my life has completely changed. I couldn't even put it into words for you guys, you know. Some people know because they've heard my story before. You know, I have a 2-year-old boy that's never seen me drink alcohol, smoke crack cocaine. Change Pampers. That's insane. It's nuts, you know. I couldn't change anything but a stem on my crack pipe, you know, a scream. I was incapable of showering, you know. I was eating was, you know, that was like a luxury for me, you know. A ho-ho, maybe like a quart of water in East New York and just keep it moving, you know. Now I have like a home and a wife and a job, you know. They let me swing a hammer in the Carpenters Union in New York State. They shouldn't even be letting a person like me hold a hammer, you know. It should be illegal, you know, but just the gifts are endless, you know. And like I said, if you're new or you're just coming back, I know what it's like to be both new and coming back. I relapsed in Narcotics Anonymous like 15 times within months. I guess I really didn't relapse. I was just using the whole time. You know? I got like the going to meetings part was easy, but it was the not using that was hard. You know? Show up cracked out and try and share and sound like the babbler. They used to call me the babbler. You know? I was like, whacked, you know? But it's good to be in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. Anytime I'm in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, I'm identifying. It doesn't matter who's sharing. It doesn't matter what they're sharing. Some part of what they're saying is for me, you know. And I got to remain open-minded. You know, I come in here, I get 3.5 years. I'm like, wow, I don't want to listen to him. I don't listen to her, you know. And if I have to, you know, go outside and smoke a Newport. The reality is I need everybody in this room, you know. Mm-hmm. People say, well, I hate, you know, I don't have to like everybody, you know. That's not it for me, you know. If I don't like you, I don't like something in myself. It has to do with me, you know. I might not like the shirt he's wearing, like I said, or the hat, you know, no offense, you know. Some people wear New York hats, you know. But, you know, but that stuff, you know, that used to get me. But 1, 2, and 3 was definitely the launching into 4, you know. And 4th step was wild for me, you know. There was stuff on there that I couldn't even put into words. But that's it. Thanks for letting me share.